The FNM changed the future prospects for sugar beet farmers and the future of the organization, such as where it will go and how it will proceed. Mr. Ironbuster, how do you view the FNM as a farmer?
All right, Ron, first of all, I'll say it's a pleasure to work with you on this. And if I may correct just one little thing, the name is Ironbuster,
okay.
Armbruster. Okay. It's been referred to that many times, so this is nothing new, so don't feel bad about it. All right, how do I view this organization as a farmer? I think probably my best approach to this and the correct approach to this is to say that I was born and raised on a farm. I worked sugar beets as a farm boy. I did manage and operate a farm which had some sugar beets on it prior to my entrance, prior to and while going to Michigan State University. Following graduation from Michigan State, I was an ag teacher, then later a county extension agent, and the last 22 years, aside from my service in the United States Air Force during World War II in Korea, my last 22 years have been spent entirely with this organization as executive secretary and later promoted to executive vice president growers of Farmers and Manufacturers Beet Sugar Association. So my background is strictly agricultural, and now to your direct question, how do I view it as a farmer? This organization has meant a great deal to the farmers. It's an organization of farm people. However, as the title indicates, Ron, Farmers and Manufacturers Beet Sugar Association, I, as I indicated before with my title, represent the farmers of this organization. And a fellow by the name of Mr. Percy Reeve represents the processors or the manufacturers. Again, it comes right back to Farmers and Manufacturers Beet Sugar Association. So I'm the farmer part of this. I am directly responsible to the farmers. I am paid by the farmers. I am not responsible in any way to the company or to Mr. Reeve, nor is he responsible to me or to the growers. We live in the same house, but we do not sleep in the same bedrooms, probably is a way to put it. This is a unique organization in a sense. It's one of the few, if not the only one, whereby the producers and the processors of their product join together in hopes of uniting their efforts for the betterment of the industry as a whole, both the growers and the processors. As I said before, this organization started in 1932. Prior to that, there was no organization of this nature at all. The growers did have some resemblance of an organization, but not a united program. Up until 1932, the sugar companies purchased sugar beets on a flat rate. In other words, at the onset of the year or during the winter months, contract time, a company representative would meet with a farmer and say, here, I'll offer you a flat rate for your sugar beets that you'll deliver next October or November. All right, this proved out fine and dandy, providing existing economic conditions seemed to follow of what was later than expected at the onset of that year. But to be more explicit and to the point, the depression of the early 30s came along. Most of the companies went broke because prior to the Great Depression, they offered the farmers X dollars for a ton of beets. By the time that crop was harvested and the beets were processed that winter and that next spring, so to speak, or I shouldn't say spring, but January and February of the next year, and the sugar then sold, so-called a year and a half later than the original agreement made with the farmer about paying him X dollars. By this depression, it lowered the price of sugar so much that the companies couldn't get enough for their product to pay off what they promised or guaranteed in a contract. And so the companies went broke, so to speak. There was only one plant operating out of about 20 during the Depression years, because of economic reasons. So then the growers decided this is an important crop to them. It had been, and they hoped it would continue to be an important crop to them. So the growers sat down with the companies in the summer of 32 and organized this organization here, Farmers Manufacturers Beet Sugar Association, and thereby changing the contract. And the contract in some substance, Ron, is something like this, that it is not a cooperative, but nevertheless, we share in the contract now. The contract states specifically that we as growers will get X percent of the net sales of sugar, pulp, and molasses, and the company will get the other X percent. Generally speaking, it's about 50-50, depending on the total value of a ton of beets. As the total value of a ton of beets goes up, the grower's share increases by a small margin. The most we can get at the present day out of a dollar is 53%. Means the company would get 47%. However, if the price of sugar, the price of molasses, the price of pulp is not so good, or if the sugar content and the content of the other ingredients is relatively low out of a ton of beets, which means the total return per ton is less, we then will share never less than 50%, though. We will get 50% of the net. That's right. This is part of the contract. So we as growers, and I wasn't in on it at the time when this was organized, but the growers felt that we are willing to sacrifice in a bad year so that U.S. companies can live, and if things are that bad and prices are down, why, the prices, cost of our operation must be down too. So we're willing to give so that both of us can live. However, on a good year, by this contract, likewise, we will share in increased returns, and you will share proportionally. And this basically is the good of this organization, Ron. Now, you probably want to ask a question about that time, but I hope I presented that rather clearly. But if not, well, I don't hesitate to ask a question on that.
In other words, you're guaranteed a certain income, right, as a farmer?
We're guaranteed not a certain income, not X dollars. We're guaranteed a certain percent of the dollar net income from sugar beets. For instance, if the price of sugar is 10 cents a hundred or $10 a hundred, and there were so many, around 2.5 hundred weight of sugar in a ton of beets, that $10 would be $25 total. In the contract, it says that if net from sugar is, let's say, $25, we as growers will get 52%. If the price of sugar is less, and the less sugar in a ton of beets than 2.5 hundred weight, and let's say the total value of the sugar and the hundred weight multiplied by the hundred weight is only $20, we'll probably get, in fact, probably, I know for a fact, we'll get only get 50% or $10, and the company gets the other 10. On the other hand, if the price of sugar is $12 a hundred, and this should be exceptionally good year, and we get 2.75 bags of sugar out of a ton of beets, and this is almost beyond the, not possibility, but it doesn't happen too often. Fact that it hasn't happened for quite a few years. But in this case, 12 times 27 would be, 12 times 2.7 would be, in round figures, 24, 30 some dollars. We then would get 53% of it, or roughly $16 a ton. Whereas when the other example I gave you, on a bad year, we'd only get $10 a ton. So we are willing to share the good and the bad. So we're not guaranteed dollars, but we're guaranteed a percent based on the value of the product. Not only sugar, but also the byproducts, which is pulp and molasses. Pulp and molasses, incidentally, Ron, constitutes probably about 15%. I'll stand corrected one way or another on that within reason, but around 15% of the gross value of the return that the farmer gets and or that the company gets. The main ingredient, of course, is sugar.
What do you see as the future prospects for the sugar beet farmers?
Well, as of today, Ron, I think the future of the sugar beet industry for this area is better than average. Farmers have a great desire to grow sugar beets. It's a good crop. It's not an exceptional crop, but it's a good crop. Now, a lot of this depends, of course, upon the price that the farmer might be able to get for other for other crops, for competitive crops. In this area of the United States or this area of Michigan, other good crops are the white navy bean, corn, and small grains. Basically, those are the major crops, other than in the area around Bay City and parts of Saginaw, where they do what we call intensive cropping system, means your vegetable cropping, such as potatoes, cabbage, carrots, tomatoes, and so forth. Melons, another good example. Those, of course, crops that go to the fresh market. That's intensive cropping. Now, that's a different type of approach, a different type of economics involved in terms of return and investment and operation. But for the most part, 98% or so of the land here is used for the so-called open crops, corn, beans, beets, small grains, wheat, in which would include wheat and oats and barley, basically. We have, at the present time, around 90,000 acres of sugar beets in this area. And this is about all that the present plant capacity can handle, our processing plants. Last year, there was a desire for more acreage of beets, likewise the year before. And I would presume next year the desire to grow beets will be probably above what can be actually handled. Incidentally, Ron, I guess I didn't mention it, other than I did say contract, but beets can only be grown under a contract. A farmer has to have a contract with a company. Otherwise, he will not get, he cannot deliver the beets because it's a contract crop. And the future looks good. The price of sugar and pulp molasses is not going up at a ratio of costs are going up. But this is also true that the price of beans, the price of wheat, the price of corn, and all other farm commodities of this nature are not going up at the ratio of the cost. So the only way that the farmer is coming out on this thing right at the present time is the fact that he's improved his productivity per acre, not just in beets, but in all crops. And this is his salvation at the present time. I have records, and we could put them in on the tape here, but take my word for it, that we are right now, last five-year average, receiving not even quite as much per ton of beets as we did 20 years ago.
That's getting pretty bad.
That's right. So again, however, what the farmer is doing is increasing his productivity to per acre. He's getting the same, as I said, per unit, but he's producing more units per acre. Now, this costs more, too, because he has to apply more fertilizer. His cost of hauling to the factory, sugar beets being hauled to the factory, and harvesting itself has increased. Now, in terms of the price of a tractor, it might be interesting to you to know that the farmer is now paying about eight times the price of a tractor than what he paid 20 years ago. Some of these big tractors that you see out in the field with cab on it or hood on it, whatever you want to call it, we call it as a cab, they're running in the area of $20,000 to $30,000. Whereas not too long ago, you could get a respectable tractor for $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. This is just one piece of farm equipment. So a lot of these people hear about the tremendous return that the farmer gets for his beets or for his other crops, but they are not acquainted with the fact that his expenses have gone up. You and I both know, Ron, taxes, for instance, or food, or clothing, or cars. you're just coming into operations, so to speak, Ron. But I know if you want to buy a car, you're paying a pretty good price, whereas compared to years ago, we could buy a brand new one for a 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old car right today. So the farmer is running into that problem. But nevertheless, he has to do something, and I should add this. Aside from increasing his production per unit, he is also increasing his units or his acreage. The small farmer is out. He just can't operate. Now, there are some small farms, and when I say small farms, Ron, I have reference to, we can almost forget the 40-acre farm, but the 80, the 120, the 160-acre farm. Most of those fellows are working in shops, industrial plants, because they cannot make out on that size of farm operations. In order to be able to devote full time and full income from a farm, a farmer now must operate in the area of 400 acres at a minimum. Again, this excludes the intensive type cropping system, melons, potatoes, and so forth. He has a terrific overhead, tax assessment wise and everything else. You hear of some of these farms being sold for a big price, but let's just put a price of $700 an acre, and I'm very modest in that, speaking of the better land, of course, not the real low productive land or unproductive land. That's altogether another class. But land that's capable to be farmed and able to produce enough to at least meet the costs will run in the area of $700 an acre up to $900 an acre. Maybe the spread should be $6 to $9 or $6 to $1,000 an acre. Well, just imagine just for a moment a fellow that has to have at least 400 acres of that. I'll put any figure on there. If you put the $1,000 an acre on there, he has $400,000 invested in land alone. And his equipment's going to run him, equipment and machinery is going to run him in the area of $150,000. Now, Ron, also on this basis, many of these farmers, coming back to the small one, many of these farmers can't afford to own that much land. Interest would eat up their income. So some of them, of course, have added on to their holdings, have bought neighboring farms, but many of the smaller farms are retained within the family or the older people because they have another income and they want to live there, and they do work in the shop, or may retain their 40 acres, but they lease it out, and somebody else, the neighbor, is operating that on a share basis or on a cash basis. So we now have a lot more farm owners-operators than what we had some years ago, simply because a farmer had to expand his units. And this is one way of doing it. He couldn't afford to borrow the money simply because $100,000 at 7 to 8%, he's paying practically all of his gain or his cost over expenses out for interest, so he doesn't have anything to live on. So instead of borrowing money to buy, many of them are renting land and operating it that way. That gives them some income without the big investment, and it also retains an income for the elderly or the previous owners. It's a smaller income, but it's an income.
Well, what do you see as technological changes? You mentioned, the picture on the wall with the tractor.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've come a long way from that. Where do you see technological changes coming? Where are they going to?
All right. It's a real good question, Ron, and I wish I would have the overall foresight of what to expect, because I could probably get rich by knowing everything in advance, but there definitely has to be some changes, because in just the last 20 years, we've seen tremendous changes made in agriculture. We've seen it in the field of production. We've seen it in the field of marketing. But I think our interest here for the moment, at least, would be in the field of production. I've mentioned one. Farmer had to increase his units. and increases production per unit. Okay, how can this be accomplished? One, as you indicated, a picture on the wall. We are now in the process of farming altogether different cultural-wise than what we did 20, 25 years ago. At that time, for instance, in beets and most other crops, it was felt that we had to have a firm, solid seed bed. Well, today, it's the exact and extreme opposite. We want a loose, pliable seed bed with plenty of airspace. This has been proven to be the thing. It is referred to sometimes as plow and plant, with a minimum of seed bed preparation. Okay, so that's one change, just in that part of the cultural practice. Another is a tremendous change in the use of fertilizer. And more importantly than just the use of fertilizer, but the correct ingredients and the correct amount. We can find out more on that by soil testing. This is now almost an accepted practice. Test your soil. Find out what fertilizer you need and how much you need for the surface. Another tremendous improvement made technologically is the seed breeding end of it, whether it's in beets or anything else. We have seen tremendous beets. We now have varieties that emerge quicker, not as quickly yet as we'd like to see them, but emerge quicker than what they used to. We have varieties that are now immune to certain diseases, some that are almost immune or are apt to repel certain insects. That's a little easier said than done, but we certainly have some that are immune to certain diseases. And this is a tremendous stride. And, of course, we are also improving the quality of the beet seed. I probably should clarify that. The quality of the beet seed has already been referred to. The quality of the beet that comes from the beet seed. We are now breeding, or our plant breeders are breeding for a beet with a higher sugar content, a higher quality beet, one that will process better, one that has a tendency to have a higher purity. And this can be done through breeding, and this can also be done through cultural practices in terms of purity, particularly. We know what fertilizers to apply in order to get a better purity. We have not reached the ultimate yet in that field. We are very concerned about the productivity overall. In other words, the more sugar that we can process from the beet, the better off we as growers will be, and of course the company will gain by it too, at least under our present contract. One other thing that should be added in terms of technological improvement, Ron, is the fact that until recently we have had laborers come in and do our field work in sugar beets. Stand reduction work, what we call it. Years ago, we planted many seeds per foot, so to speak, and then had hand labor come in and eliminate all the extra beets, leaving about one beet per every foot. While this was being done, that same operation also then eliminated the weeds, hoed out the weeds. All right, we made two improvements in that respect. One, we now have a monogerm seed, a seed that will, and usually does, there are exceptions to the rule, but it's almost 100% correct, will emerge but one little seedling from a seed, whereas the original beet seed, Ron, had a multiple of ovules in a conglomerate of what we call a seed. And from it sprung anywhere from 1 to 6, 7, 8, 9 seedlings. And so you had to get the labor to come along and finger thin these beets. Hold one of those seedlings and tear away the extra ones, the 2 or 3 or the 6 or 8, whatever the number was. And he had to do that, not only so-called hoe out the extra beets in between so-called 1 foot of row, but by leaving that one beet there, he had a finger thin it. Make sure that you only left one beet there instead of two or three or four. Now, the monogerm seed has eliminated that. It's exactly like the word mono, one. The seed emerges, emerges but one seedling. So we've made tremendous strides in that. Now, the other thing that has helped along with that same area of responsibility, as I indicated before, the workers had to hoe out the weeds. We're now using herbicides. And although they're not perfected to the degree that we'd like to see it, but tremendous has been made in the last 10 years on the use of herbicides that can be applied to beets either at planting time or post-emergence. And we can get rid of the broadleaf weeds or the grass weeds. Of course, this takes two completely different herbicides. Keep in mind, Ron, that a beet is a broadleaf, and we have many weeds that are broadleafs. So you can see it's kind of a touchy thing. You've got to get a herbicide that will get the broadleaves relative to weeds, but not the broadleaf of the beet itself. But this has been perfected, not perfect, of course. But we have, because of this, reduced our labor needs in the fields by umpteen percent. For these 80 and 90,000 acres of beets that we have in this area at the present time, we're employing only about 1,000 laborers a year now, whereas 20 years ago, we had 30,000 laborers here.
That's quite a reduction.
That is a tremendous change. Now, the thing that we like to improve upon some more would be the herbicidal end of it. And I did mention that we have bred some beets that are resistant to diseases. Now, on top of just the breeding end of it, we also want to use some chemicals that might help us in that respect, and also some chemicals that will reduce the damage by insects or wireworm in the ground, and we have some of those chemicals in use, and there's room for improvement in that. So overall, Ron, the picture of beet production continues to look favorable. I think it should be mentioned here, the farmer, of course, is looking